Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Watt podcast with Russell Guyver, that's me, and Peter Marsh, that's you, isn't it, Peter?
Last time I looked, yeah.
still is you, is it? Still compass.
I haven't changed my name yet.
And we are back for the first time in quite a while in our favourite old pub in Borough.
Cheers.
The Gladstone, cheers. Excellent, and it's great to be back. And the old guard are here as well, man in the forts, and serving the beers, which is great. We're going to have
I appreciate being called the old guy.
The old guard.
The old guard.
And I'm wondering if maybe we might end up having some more chicken tikka pies today. I've got the sneaking feeling that might happen.
I'm only having one, but, you know, maybe two.
And this is our end of season review, and a few other bits as well besides. What we're going to do is, in the first bit, we're just going to talk about the culmination of the end of the season. There's a few more bits happening, including an amazing game today in the National League playoff semi-final, which we'll get to in a second. We're also going to do the review. That'll be the second part. And then third part, we'll probably get on with some other general chat. And it is the occasion of the Champions League tonight as well.
We may also be drinking, so you might hear a little bit more slurring as we go on.
Not that we've got a guilty thing with that happening in the past, of course. However, yes, we're here for the Champions League later on as well, so we might do a little bit on that. But I don't think anything could compare with the game today. There's been a great end of season. The playoffs are amidst, aren't they, in the EFL. We've already found out that Sunderland have gone up into the Championship from League One. This weekend, we've got the other two EFL playoffs, and we've got the semi-finals of the National League Premier playoffs as well. So, the EFL, we've got, as we're speaking, there's the Mansfield-Port Vale game.
Port Vale, 2-0 up still.
2-0 up and a man up.
57 minutes gone.
Mansfield down to 10 men.
Yeah.
And that game's looking like Port Vale are going to go into League One. We know Sunderland have gone into the Championship. And tomorrow, as we speak, is, of course, the big game. The richest game in English football, in world football, is, of course, the Huddersfield Forest game. All of that, I'm sure, we'll chat about in future time. However, the National League, there's the first two semi-finals today. It was at Wrexham. The system's good, actually. I like the system where you have six teams in the playoffs and the two bottom sides play away to the next two sides up the pecking order. As it happened, both the away teams won, which is interesting, which was Grimsby and Chesterfield. And then they've now gone away to this weekend, Wrexham and Solihull Moors, respectively. Grimsby away at Wrexham today ended Wrexham 4, Grimsby 5 in extra time, 4-all at the end of normal time. What a game, Peter. Can you kind of get your teeth into this?
Genuinely a game that had everything. 9 goals, 1 penalty, 2 penalties, clear penalties denied.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
Loads of controversy, which weirdly evened out, in my opinion.
The referee gave it pretty much everything wrong. But then, yeah, that evened out overall, so it was one of those games where I was knackered after just watching as a neutral, let alone, you know, what the fans must have been going through. Grimsby fans have had a crazy week. It's been like, they went to Notts County on Monday, were one down on the 94th minute, I think it was, or something like that. They equalised 94th minute, won it in 119th minute, and today they've gone to a 5-4 match where they've won it in 119th minute again, and
late goal
with an ex-Wrexham player scoring the winner. Hollywood script against the Hollywood owners. It's like,
exactly.
Could not make it up if you tried.
You really couldn't. And those late goals, I mean, they put Brighton to shame, don't they, really? The amount of late goals they're getting. And
yeah.
Now they've got a final.
They've got the final at London Stadium to get back into the league immediately, yeah. Eventually.
Which will be against Solihull Moors or their visitors. Chesterfield, which will be tomorrow.
Yeah, so far, the omens will be Chesterfield because every single away team has won.
Yeah, exactly. What a game this was, though. I mean, there was loads of mistakes in there, both in terms of the referee and in terms of both defences as well.
Neither team appeared to be able to defend most of the time.
I mean, Wrexham have got heavyweight talent going forward. They've got Mullin, they've got Jordan Davies, who's a former player of Albion.
And 23, and Palmer as well, who's
He came from Wimbledon. They signed two divisions down to join.
Mullin would have been at Cambridge, would have been. League One as well.
So they're an ambitious club. They put money into it, and to be honest with you, they push all the way with Stockport, and both those Stockport and Wrexham deserve to go up. But it's not to be for Wrexham. They're going to have another season where I think everyone in the National League's groaning that they've been knocked out.
Yeah, I would say that they're almost
get rid of them.
As much as a certainty for going up, because I imagine there'll be more money thrown at them and more cash spent and. They will end up being, Parkinson's a decent manager at that sort of level and lower levels, and they'll go up next season quite comfortably, I'd imagine. Yeah. They might have a slightly up and down start, but after that, but I mean, it's hard to see how they can improve their strike force at that level.
I know. I don't think they need to, actually. They don't need to sign anyone. They've already got the best. Because one of those, Ollie Palmer, came in January, so obviously they didn't have him the whole way through. And I think if they had done, he would have been the top scorer instead of Mullin. It was a golden boot winner for the whole division. But anyway, I mean, just to talk
about. Well, he did miss two very good chances at the last minute of normal time today, which would have probably won it for them.
Yeah. They also have a good save as well from the goalie. He was a very good Grimsby goalie. A Crocombe, I think it sounds.
Despite four goals conceded.
Yes, exactly. It sounds weird to say, but that's because of his defenders.
The one I would say stood out to me today was McAtee of Grimsby, who his brother is at Man City and was at one point linked to Albion. The first goal he got for Grimsby was incredible. It was fantastic. I mean, he just didn't even look like he was about to shoot, and then suddenly arrowed it into the top corner. It was right after they'd gone behind unjustly because Grimsby started really well. Wrexham just barely went out their half, and then for the first attack got a... Why it was a very questionable penalty, and then
I mean that's right. The goal disallowed. Wrexham went 1-0 up with a questionable penalty. Grimsby then turned it round, but almost immediately striking back. Then going ahead 2-1. Wrexham turned it round to 3-2.
Completely, I mean, literally immediately, like two goals in 2 minutes.
This was at the beginning of the second half as well, wasn't it? And then Grimsby turned it round to 4-3. So you had this complete topsy turvy thing going on, which continued with Wrexham and equalising
six
to 4-4.
Goals, I think, from like 47 to 80 minutes or something like that.
Amazing, because it's 1-1 at half time.
Yeah.
So the rest of that happened after half time. Wrexham got that to 4-4. So you're thinking, right, well, the obvious thing now is Wrexham get the winner based on the patterns of play. But for once, it turned off the pattern, and Grimsby managed to get that late.
Again, a winner from a long throw. I was saying on the WhatsApp groups earlier, it was so good, so fun to see like two massive long throws from like almost the halfway line, kind of causing havoc at both ends.
Yeah, they were
proper Dave Chaloner sort of. And they weren't just like looping as well, they were kind of properly whipped in. And,
which feels fitting because Dave Chaloner just won the title. Yeah. Division with Stockport. Who were the players? I
think actually Coffee as well. Toza, the centre back for Wrexham, and what's his name? Not Cribbin, but something like that.
Cribbins?
Not Chopper.
Chopper Harris?
Cropper, that was his name. Cropper. Proper northern name for
Cropper Grimsby. Northern name, yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, Wrexham came a cropper from one of his old roads.
Exactly, yeah. Rather appropriate again, isn't it? Yeah. But, no, fantastic.
The two goals scored from the centre half, who's name?
Waterfall, who's the captain of Grimsby as well.
Who used to play for Wrexham.
Exactly. Every time I hear his name, I'm thinking Stone Roses. Anyway, no, he's a good player. And that was his 8th and 9th goals, I think, of the season.
With long throws like that, I'm not surprised.
Exactly.
You literally never see him, without Stoke being up there, you never see him in Premier League these days. You see the odd one from like the edge of the area sort of thing, but you don't see him ever from arrowed in from the halfway line like you used to get with Dave Chandler and players like that.
I think I've seen one or two, he's belted a couple in as well, really good strikes.
Yeah, they're not like kind of,
with his feet, in other games.
Who was the Stoke player who did the long throws all the time? I can't, was it
Dalap? Dalap, yeah, Rory Dalap. That's him. Yeah, guy with very big ears. Not
in a way, though, obviously.
not as bad as, or as good, if you like big ears, as Thomas Frank. But there we go.
But at least he didn't get in the way when he's like take a long throw.
Maybe it helped him with his trajectory. Who knows? Anyway, that was that. I mean, fantastic entertainment. I'm sure the two managers would both be lamenting the fencing.
I imagine they'll both be furious. Generally, yeah, it's kind of like.
But Grimsby go on.
Paul Hurst is building his way up again because he had a really good job at Shrewsbury and then took the mistake of going to Ipswich, which is a job that seems to be a poison chalice to everyone now.
Yeah.
So I noticed another former Ipswich manager in the playoff final if I'm Chesterfield, but I realised they got Paul Cook now, which I hadn't realised.
That's right, who's a good manager and he's...
Yeah,
he's
a lot of good managers have failed to do well with Ipswich they seem to be a bit of a poison challenge.
I think the talent down there is really good, and it's interesting that Luke Garrard, who's the Boreham Wood manager, I think is amongst the best, said that he thinks Pete Wilde, the Halifax manager, pound for pound, is the best manager.
There's rumours of him, I heard, going to Notts County, who just lost Ian Birchnell to Forest Green, who lost their manager to Watford.
And I'm sure he'll lose his job within 5 minutes of being at Watford. But yeah, that's right. I mean, County have done well.
You think he'll last that long?
Yeah, maybe not. they've been pushing at the door, County. They're one of the teams that you would think were hoping to step on now. They've been down there. They've paid the dues. So
they're a very big team, as are Wrexham, as are Stockport.
The club side, all the attendances. Grimsby averaging 5,500, Wrexham averaging 10,000, Chesterfield get 2,000 or 3,000, County get 2,000 or 3,000.
You look at it without wanting to go talk about it, I sound like a Leeds fan, and I'm not, because I don't think that, these teams deserve to be in there. But even look at the likes of Stevenage, Crawley, Morecambe, Fleetwood, Accrington, none of them Accrington have got a history, but in terms of the fan base and that sort of thing, compared to the top half of the conference, which is why so many teams who go up from the National League do really well immediately. Even Sutton, who aren't that bigger club, came close to the playoffs this year.
That's right. You look at the teams at Hartlepool, decent club with a rich history in the league, but I wouldn't say that they're a bigger club than any of those other teams struggling. For example, there's another club that's come up. Barrow have been in the league, they've been out in the league for a very long time.
They're not huge, but yeah, you look at some of the ones who. But even the ones like Yeovil and Burton, who, obviously aren't that big, and didn't have a league history, went straight through a couple of years. And actually, I would think Stockport, I would say they've got a fair chance, and Wrexham, once they do go up, will have a fair chance of going through the league.
So they get an 8 or 9,000.
There should be three teams going up.
Sell out, don't they, every
Yeah,
match, so.
Which I say, I don't understand why three teams go up from League Two and one team goes up automatically from National League. I'm just like, three teams automatically up from one team,
I really don't like that. Because it's an anomaly.
I think we've said before we should even it out and have two up from automatically in one playoff from each division.
If it needs rebranding, then fair enough, I think. Really, if you want to call it League Three, because there's so many big clubs there. We haven't even mentioned teams like Torquay and Southend and Aldershot and various other teams that were in the league before who have been nowhere, really.
I actually wouldn't mind rebranding the actual playoffs in the league as the same as the playoffs in the non-league, the FIRL. Having the six teams.
Yeah,
and having home legs for just given what I think playoffs are needed. I think it's a great thing, but I also think that maybe having a third, obviously it's kind of ridiculous now that Grimsby have gone and won.
It would only take slightly longer in terms of time, because you'd have one single matches with the higher ranked team at home for that game, which is fine.
Yeah.
But obviously you need to leave a couple more, two or three more days rest time before you can have another match, whereas with the...
Well, I think we just do one weekend, rather than having like midweek, and then a gap of a week and a half.
Stretch over 5 days or whatever.
Yeah, it's doable. Anyway. So, I just don't understand. I think they should reformat them, because you don't. I mean, look at Albion and what happened to us after we lost to this. I think having a break for the team who just missed out on all that promotion potentially is actually a good thing. Kind of giving a break to that team, because the only ones who are top two are meeting is tomorrow with Forest Huddersfield.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
that's the only. I mean, if you go down.
There's always something, isn't
you go
it?
Down,
it's never usually the
Sunderland were the higher team, but Wickham were lower than MK Dons, although to be fair, MK Dons got knocked out, so I'm fine with that. Mansfield won despite being the lower team.
Yeah.
Obviously, the National League could end up being 6th against 7th in the end, although obviously that's the other format.
This is what Chesterfield Grimsby if it ends up in that.
Yeah. Could be 3rd against 6th or it could be 6th against 7th.
But I was interesting because I've caught up with some games today, so I watched that match on a bit of a delay because I was also catching up with last Sunday's game, which of course was the FA Trophy. Sorry, not the FA Trophy, the FA Vase, the smaller of the two non-league tournaments. Where Littlehampton were involved. So you've got, for anyone that doesn't know, the FA Trophy is for top four levels of the non-league. FA Vase is for fifth tier downwards. And Littlehampton and their opponents, Newport Pagnell, better known as the service station, but it is a decent town in the Milton Keynes area, they're both basically amongst the top level because they're in the fifth.
It's both little Hampton were singing at them, like, you know, we love Membury or something like that, or
well, you're just a service station on the M, whatever it is. Yeah,
no, what the gap?
Yeah, mind the gap. What the gap? But I mean, overall though, I think they're in the top divisions of that category, and Littlehampton went up as champions of their division, so they would probably go in as favourites of the game, but they were well beaten on the day, to be honest. I think it was just one of those days, it wasn't happening, it wasn't clicking, their set-piece specialist was missing. The interesting bit was Pattinson. This is Lucas Pattinson.
Brother
of Jasper, of Worthing, of course.
Who got sent off, didn't he, against Brighton in the Tussock Senior Cup,
I didn't follow that, yeah, did he? Okay,
I think
that could have been a damaging moment for them, because he's one of their best players, and by all accounts, what I've been hearing on the Rebel Yell podcast, he's off. He's going to be going quite high up the rankings from Worthing's new level with the National League South. He's a good player, and there's a lot of interest in him.
There aren't many players around called Jasper,
but his brother Lucas Pattinson is. He plays in the same position. I think they both have the number 7, don't they, on their jerseys.
And I honestly could not say that.
He plays the same role as attacking right sider, and he looks identical to him. I don't know if they're twins or not, but if they're not, then they might as well be. They've got exactly the same look, and they play in the same style. And it looked to me as if he was one of the key players they needed to shine and to do something in this game, and I don't think he was quite able to do it. I don't think the link-up play was there. They looked a bit overawed. I think they were rushing their passes a bit. There was too many stray balls, and they were trying to rely a little bit on kind of, well, just not very good quality counter-attacking, actually. And Newport Pagnell sat in. They kept their shape, as Adam Virgo said. Keeping their shape won them the game, which I think is true. They did look the better side on the day. So well done to them. Congratulations to them. And a hell of a first goal from, I think it's Bailey. Barnes, his name, Kieran Barnes. There was a corner, nudged out, took a bounce, then he hit it on the next bounce up. Caught it absolutely beautiful. Really, really difficult technique. Goalkeeper had no chance, that set them on their way, and they ended up winning 3-0. But it was entertaining to see Littlehampton there. Both sides have never been there in their histories before, so it was a great day out. 7,000 sellouts for both sets of supporters, and there was a few Wrexham fans and other people in there early as well, so it was a good day for what they call non-league finals day, which has been going for about 6 years now, and I think having the FA Vars and the higher ranked FA Trophy tournaments on the same day is a really good idea. So that's that. Peter, you've been scouring through to try and have a look at the Pattinson send off at senior. I can't read what that says, I haven't got my glasses.
Basically, you said it right, yeah.
Yeah, so Pattinson was sent off in the Senior Cup. Tolai got two.
Straight red in stoppage time.
What was the score? 4-2 in the end, wasn't it, for Albion? Yeah, yeah. So they retain the trophy, is it? Retain it?
Yeah,
you know,
champions of Sussex.
No one else has ever seen that. No one ever will.
Mate.
Oh, yeah, maybe, maybe. So, you know, so Littlehampton, I mean, they... I don't know what happened with the other cup, but they had the potential to win three others.
I'm not sure it hadn't happened before last weekend, I think. Yeah,
no, I might have done since, I'm not sure. They were playing Salting in what I presume is a divisional trophy. They'd already won a trophy.
It's not the FA Cup then?
No, it's not the FA Cup, no. They've won some other trophy, and they've won the league. They got promoted into Hastings division. Hastings got promoted into Worthing's division. Worthing got promoted into the National South. And it's one division away from the game we were talking about today. The standard, well, defending wasn't great, but the standard of the attacking play was pretty impressive. That's one division above where Worthing are moving into.
I was going to say this, so talking of National League South, the playoff final last weekend, Dorking equalising late, very, very late on in injury time, having conceded in 91 minutes. Dorking have been promoted. They've existed for 23 years as Dorking Wanderers, although they've moved. And I think they've been promoted 13 times?
12 times in 23 years.
Yeah, it's like around that.
In 23 years with no relegation.
Yeah.
So that is
genuinely... I mean, they were like well below the Sussex County League before. They were weirdly played in Sussex initially.
They were playing Sunday football. They were playing club teams. Literally, club teams.
And then they moved into... randomly, the Sussex Senior League, it's not, even though they're in Surrey.
It's a bit of a border, though.
And so they played... I think there were four promotions in the Pub League, four promotions in the Sussex Senior League, and then another... Yeah, it must be four in... in the top eight division.
Very ambitious club. They loaned Callum Keeley to Worthing, who was a key player in the second half of the season for Worthing.
Yes, he was at Worthing before, wasn't he? Then signed for them. Yeah.
And I think essentially they were very keen to see Worthing were very keen to see Dorking get promoted on that basis. So they might have more chance of keeping him. I think he is staying actually, and they've signed some of the key players. Aaron at the back, so to speak, and Ollie in the attack. They both signed new deals, so
they're going to win the National League South.
But no, I mean, it's good. Congratulations to Dalton. They've done brilliant. That's a superb story. It's good to see. I mean, it's nice.
They must have money behind them. That sort of thing.
I think they have.
They've only been at the new ground in 5 years since they merged with. I mean, Dorking Wanderers were 23 years old, and they've gone from.
That'll create some animosity for some people, I'd imagine. But it is good to see what you can do.
They're playing, you know, 23 years ago. Or 26, 27 years ago, whatever it was, Oldham were in the Premier League and Dorking didn't even exist.
Yeah.
And they'll be playing each other next season.
Yeah.
That is genuinely mad. It's like kind of.
Yeah, that's really.
And actually, you wouldn't bet against Dorking coming higher next season because Oldham are a mess.
Yeah.
And Dorking obviously have got quite ambitious owners and stuff. So,
yeah
that's just crazy. When you say that, it's like literally they were. I mean, it wasn't even like they were, well, if they were, when they were, they were about 15, 16 apart, but at that point, they didn't even exist, like 30 years ago, something
like that. Exactly. So there we go. So congratulations to all those that have got promoted. There's a really good episode of the Rebel Yell podcast.
Really good to see York come up as well.
York, yes. Yeah, they've gone up alongside the Gateshead International Pram. Yeah.
Same for Brackley, though, although they were up there all season and they've not quite made it, but.
Yeah, and for Wrexham, missing out today, they missed out on the FA Trophy as well last weekend in the follow-up game after Littlehampton on the same day. So, yeah, disappointed for them, but that will go again, I'm sure. The Hollywood boys were in town again.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, it's a big club. They're getting 10,000 crowds.
I think they'll be... I'm actually happy for Grimsby. I actually kind of want Grimsby to win because I think Wrexham will go up again next season easily.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Grimsby may not have done... Yeah. They've probably...
Hurst, I think that's his second or third spell with them, by the way. I know you said he's gone off to Shrewsbury and Ipswich.
Yeah.
He, I think he got them up before, and then things went pear-shaped and he left, got sacked or whatever. And he's definitely been.
I think he may have even just left to go to Shrewsbury, didn't he? Because they were a division higher, possibly.
Yeah, it might have been that actually. Yeah, but it's good to see.
No, he was, as I said, like Ipswich was just the wrong job for him. Yeah. I think he's obviously quite a good manager and he's rebuilding his reputation.
And Rob Beckett was there with his comedy mates, one of whom is a Grimsby fan, so he's in the away end of Grimsby today, which is quite amusing, looking very sunburnt.
Yes, he's not a classic Grimsby fan, you wouldn't say.
And looking a bit hawky, unlike us two, of course, slimline physiques.
I'm looking very spelt now, you know.
A very heavy football season. Of course we're looking in fine fettle. Ahead of your wedding, Peter, of course.
Yeah,
there seems to be fitting into you, though.
I have actually done that, you know. Like, before today, though.
Yeah, I know. See how we go after this. And on note,
we're both fitting our clothes at the moment.
We've emptied our first pint, which was a very nice pint of Duke Session IPA.
Duke, not to be confused with the dog.
Not Duke the dog, Peter's dog, no, Duke's not with us today. Duke, and it's been very nice. We're going to break now for probably some more pints, maybe, and a little bit of food. And we'll be back in part two with our review of the Albion season. And so, fully fed, fully watered, we are back with part two, Peter, which is the review of the season.
I'm not
section.
Sure fully watered is.
Well, we can carry on watering.
Slightly more watered.
We've all more watered, yeah. I'm on the great Gypsy Hill Brewery Stout, which is called, what was it again? Applauded or something.
Applauded or something like that, yeah. Applause, maybe.
You've had a couple of jutes. What are you on now?
I'm on Siren.
Siren, yeah. Marvellous, good stuff. Very nice. Okay, well, let's crack on because we're at limited time because your friends have showed up a bit early. So we're going to do a quick run through of the review of the season. A run through of the review that we've reviewed.
I thought the review was already checked.
Yeah.
I thought the review was already checked.
Yeah, I thought it was bad. Should we do it again? So the review of the season. So obviously ninth place, best ever finish, best ever points total, amazing record away from home, a load of improvements to certain players. Some good signings that are looking promising. Loads and loads of really good things. Weirdly, we had a season with loads of draws and a run of defeats as well, but overall, it's been a brilliant...
Loads of draws isn't that weird, because we had loads of draws mostly.
That's true, yeah. But it's been a brilliant season in general, hasn't it? Yeah. So, let's just take it... We'll come to Player of the Season vote, by the way, which we've been reaching out to our listeners, to our friends, our colleagues,
associates,
our contributors that have been on the show. And we'll give those results out shortly. So stay tuned for that. Can you, our pets as well? Yeah. Can you guess who's won everybody. Well, we'll come to that in about 10 minutes' time.
Connolly, I think, was that my guess.
Yeah, Connolly is a nailed-on favourite, isn't he? Obviously, he got two goals in the League Cup match, you know. Don't you know? Anyway, against Swansea, by the way, for anyone that cares. So, the review of the season. Let's go month by month then, very quickly. Just a quick skip through of it. So, it started in August, and it started rather well, didn't it, Peter? 4 wins in 5, I think, at the beginning of the season. The only disappointment being losing at home to, well, champions-elect Everton. Hang on, what went wrong with that? We had a good start, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Great first win at Burnley, where we were, frankly, pretty awful first half, and came back second half really well, and probably 8 goals from Mopay and McAllister turned it round.
Yeah.
Comfortable win against Watford, who were dreadful at the MX, to make it, yeah, with Duffy and then Mopay scoring.
Yeah.
Win against Cardiff in the League Cup as well, which with Modder and Zakiri scoring in that.
Yeah.
To make it 2-0. Pretty comfortable, quite decent. A few youngsters getting games. And then, yeah, there's this point to us to beat to Everton, but then before we had Kukurea, we didn't have any, and I think both March and Lamptey were missing, so we had no wing backs at all.
Kukurea didn't make his debut to the Brentford
game, yeah. And then, yeah, with Kukurea making his debut at Brentford, we won 1-0, and then beat Leicester 2-1 to go into the top 3 or 4, I think it was, in the Premier League, with 4 wins out of 5. Leicester game, obviously, a little bit controversial with Mopay's penalty being questioned by Leicester, and also then their 2-0 goal.
And we'd squeezed the win against Brentford as well, so we'd had a bit of fortune, haven't we, at this point?
2-0 win against Swansea as well in the League Cup was little did we know when we won that we wouldn't win again until Boxing Day,
or that Aaron Connolly would never score for us again.
I think we might have had an idea about that.
Yeah, so good start to the season, and I think we've picked up where we left off. We've improved on certain things. Definitely, I think having a good point total early doors helped us, didn't it, really?
Because it kept us away from all the bad stuff when we were like really struggling.
So as the season wore on, we were never really under genuine threat of relegation, were we?
No, even after 11 games without win and 6 defeats in a row, we were never dragged right into it, although another couple of defeats or another couple of games without win, we might have been at one point.
Yeah. And then we moved into October.
No, we were still September.
Oh, no, we're still in September, yeah.
We're away from Palace, so obviously, you know where this all goes.
That.
You know, they obviously were beating us, and, you know, they were loving it, and it was great. And
I've only got one question.
I don't remember what happened after that.
Why did they let it bounce?
I don't know. It was a difficult decision, you know, but they just thought they'd just give us a goal. It was very nice of them. Really well taken by Mopay. 95th minute, that was... of all the last-minute equalisers of the season, that was pretty epic, wasn't
it? Can I just say at this point as well, in terms of the podcast, I think we had Why'd You Let It Bounce or something like that as the title of the episode.
Yeah.
And we also had Potty Picks in Pottersville or something as one of the others, which are two of the
he
most...
he played Lallana and Gross in midfield, didn't he? Yeah.
So those are two of the most favourite podcast titles.
I also remember the Caxton having a pint of Why'd You Let It Bounce that she had at the time as well.
Oh, that was sensational. Love it.
We were going after the Arsenal game tour, and we all had like pints of Why'd You Let It Bounce. So yeah, into October, which was slightly more inauspicious. It was not that great. We won major exception, which was obviously came at the end of the month. We drew 0-0 with Arsenal and Norwich. Arsenal, we were all over them, hammered them, and should have beaten them really. But
very
didn't
frustrating.
Have any gilt-edged chances. It wasn't like the Leeds and Norwich games that came later. There was no real kind of ones we had to score. It was just kind of we didn't quite put the final ball in the box. And then Norwich was just a really poor game, as both of them were.
We both made our separate ways up there to the Carrow Road, and we met up.
I know,
we did the day trip, and
do you enjoy this weekend in Norwich?
Good lad.
Didn't have to see the football though, so that was good.
That's why he enjoyed his weekend in Norwich.
Yeah, then we had obviously a bit of a hammering by City, where we kind of played into their hands. We played a very high line and were 3 down in half an hour. And
we've really not cracked City. I know we got the 3-2 win, but certain circumstances.
I mean, to be fair, they are probably the highest, hardest ones to crack in a sense, but we get to beat Chelsea, the one we get to beat of all of them. So
that's true, actually. We've
got closer and we've done better against Chelsea. Whereas, other than that one game,
unbeaten
where,
in two or three
nothing
games
to play for, and then we lost to Leicester in the League Cup on penalties, which quite, to be fair, not a bad result. We played quite well, and then the result of the month by quite a distance, to order at Anfield from 2-0 down to the point where Mane scored a third and
first
was disallowed.
Game of the season, this,
was it? Yeah. I mean, I was there for that. It was a. In hindsight, now it was worth the 8-hour journey back on a Sunday.
Yes,
at the time, it wasn't.
I forgot about that.
The 8-hour journey back on a Sunday.
Oh my god!
Now, sitting here now, I'm glad I went. but because I missed quite a lot of the big games.
What a result. I mean, we're sitting here just ahead of the Champions League final, where Liverpool, barring one or two quirks on the last day of the season, could have been going for a quadruple today. They're going for a cup treble. They are one of the best teams of all time, as are Manchester City. And the fact that we came from 2-0 down, not only to draw, but arguably to have deserved to have won. I think Klopp did allude to that. And Trossard did score an offside goal.
The 2-0, I mean, they had two goals as well, obviously, we've got to say. Salah had one at 2-1, and they had the goal at 2-0.
Yeah.
It has to be said at 2-0, I didn't feel that we were out of it in terms of the way we were playing. We were playing very open. There was a lot of end-to-end stuff, but we just weren't taking our chances.
Would you say this is our best performance of the season?
Arguably, yeah, I think probably.
It's debatable, isn't it?
I mean, United just didn't look interested, and there are other ones obviously up there as well, but Tottenham away probably is up there. But yeah, I mean, the way we played, we didn't deserve to be two down, and we scored two of the best goals you'll see, I think, probably ever or whatever.
Wekwe
obviously won goal of the season for his, although it's not the sort of goal I would vote for normally. I would much more vote for the second goal, which was from Trossard, which was as with Grossi's goal against Man U. Started off with a brilliant pass from Sanchez, and ended up with a brilliant to Correa, good move down the wing and then into the box.
How often do these long passes, either from Sanchez or Dunk or someone, end up with Cucurella
It was a really well worked goal. Nice ball from Lallana into Trossard, who dominated it initially, and then sidestepped his Robertson and into the corner. And I mean, if anyone was going to win it later on, I think Lamptey came on, and it was the first time we'd seen Lamptey since he'd come back after like two or three games, where he looked like he destroyed Liverpool when he came on. He came on about half an hour left, and they couldn't deal with him. And it was very, very. Very good game, very nice, very good day out.
Yeah, brilliant.
Not so good next day, but November then obviously wasn't so good. Two rather frustrating home results. Newcastle, where we dominated for an hour and then let them equalise, and after that were pretty poor.
Yeah.
And Leeds, where we were dominated throughout and couldn't get
nobody
the goal.
Scored. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Villa away, where we were. It was a nothing game, really. Should have been 0-0.
Should have been 0-0.
But we were chasing the game
1-0.
Neither team deserved to win.
2-0 was just because we weren't really.
We just fell apart at 1-0, I thought, to be honest. I don't think we even put men forward. They just sort of like they woke up and we...
We should have stopped that counter-attack for the first goal, the Watkins goal, shouldn't we?
It's an example where we should be more cynical, really, in a way. You should have taken the booking on the halfway line.
Their box,
Or even on the halfway line, but just not let them. I mean, it was a really good goal, to be fair. But yeah, it's one of those ones where... It's frustrating because we shouldn't have let it happen.
Yeah.
So now we go on to the month of the late goals.
Yeah, we became the late goal specialist.
We had three away games in December.
Yeah.
All of which were 1-1. All of which we scored late on, although the Chelsea away wasn't as late as the other two. West Ham obviously was crazy overhead kick from Mope to make it 1-1 in the 94th minute, down to 10 men.
Yeah.
Then Southampton was a crazy goal from Mope to make it with 10 men late on. Mainly crazy because their bizarre defending of the free kick meant that Mope was onside, even though he should have been miles offside.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because their keeper had a knock, but it's like he didn't go off, which he could have done. Mm. And then we lost to the rather disappointing loss to Wolves, where we had loads of COVID, and because we're Brighton and not like Tottenham and Man U, who both got our
game cancelled.
Yeah, both got their game cancelled against us because they had lots of COVID in their camp, but we didn't get our game cancelled because we're Brighton and no one gives a shit about whether we've got players who are ill.
You cynic, Peter.
It's almost like who'd have thought it? And then great result against Brentford in front of like two men and a dog, basically, because that's all that could make it at 8 o'clock on Boxing Day in the middle of COVID.
Boxing Day, 8 o'clock.
In the middle of COVID, when you're relying on public transport and there's no public transport running. It's like...
Genius.
It's like, yeah, I mean... Yeah. It was a great result, and we played really well. Trossard and Mope, really good game. And then, that was the start of seven games unbeaten, which continued with Chelsea away. Welbeck's late equaliser.
Great game, that.
Sadly wasn't at, but...
Welbeck's late equaliser, and the Chelsea fans trying to hold on to the ball when they were winning.
Yeah.
And then eventually a guy trying to kick it over his own head into the crowd behind. Instead, he kicked it into the face of his mate right next to him, which was immensely amusing.
I mean, he could have kicked it into his own face. That would
have
been more fun.
Yeah, it would have been. That's the only way it could have been better. And and then a moment later, we got the equaliser, which meant all their time wasting had been to their own detriment.
I was watching on Zoom with my mate Dave, who's a Chelsea fan, while we were away over between Christmas and New Year, and he was not impressed.
Oh, I loved it. Great day.
On the way, not surprised. I think it looked like it could easily happen. And then, decent January. We won 3-2 at Everton on 2nd of January to complete a really good kind of Christmas period.
Yep.
And then one at West Brom in the Cup, which was a pretty ordinary game, but we kind of turned it around.
Walpay scored a goal in that game, I think, didn't he? Which I think was unusual in as much as he doesn't normally play cup matches, or he hadn't.
No, but I think Welbeck may have played the previous one or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then 3-1 all draws in a row.
Yeah.
Home to Palace with a late own goal equaliser.
Yeah.
Then home to Chelsea with Webster's powerful header.
Yeah.
Which I watched at the Everton pub in waiting in Bridgend because there was like, it was we were down to, in Wales that week. And then a 1-1 draw at Leicester with Welbeck scoring.
Yeah. Hmm. Decent result.
And then a 7 game unbeaten run in the league. Continued after we lost to Tottenham in the Cup, which we won't talk about. We won 2-0 at Watford, which was another Mopay. Mopay's last goal of the season. And
one of the doubles completed at the end of the season.
And
Brentford being one
really
of the
others. Good, the other one. Yeah. And Webster poked in from memory, but perhaps a tackle or whatever he put in, I think. He couldn't quite score it, and he tackled the guy and it went into the net or something.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, less said about the next six games, the better. We obviously lost to Man U, which, not surprising, although we were unlucky, I think, in a lot of ways. Got stuffed by Burnley, beaten by Villa in a rather poor game, again 2-0 by Villa.
Yeah.
Lost at Newcastle when we basically didn't turn up for the first 20 minutes, and can boss it for that reason.
Lost
to Liverpool deservedly, lost to Tottenham pretty much deservedly.
2-0, was it?
Yeah, both were 2-0.
Yeah.
And so you get to January, to April, and some of us who were had visions of like, people staying, doing okay in the Premier League and not necessarily going down with 32 points, we're kind of slightly concerned a little bit.
And yes, they were, weren't they?
Peter? Other people who
were completely
chilled
out and relaxed.
We'd be fine with 34 at that point, 31 at that point, whether it was, or 32.
33, I think we had. We already had 33, I think. Is that right, or 31?
31, I think.
Yeah, might be 31.
We're more worried.
Mm. Someone was getting restless, wasn't he?
Awful draw with Norwich, where we had 31 shots and had, I think, 4 on target, where we only really tested Krul once, I think, all game. Mm. And that was, to be fair, quite a kind of like reflex one from Beltman that actually he couldn't do anything else with.
Can I just mention this point? I was smoking cigars after Boxing Day. I knew we were going to be fine after that game.
Just saying. Yeah.
And if you're listening, Andy Bravery, yes, I know I predicted 33 points would be the safety margin, and I know that wasn't the case. But I was only 2 out in the end. Just 2 out.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be happy last game of the season.
No, I wouldn't have been happy. No, definitely not. No.
And then at half-time that last game of the season, you would not have been happy with 35 points.
Yeah.
So we come into the run-in, which was, obviously, North London is ours.
But
2 weekends in a row,
is.
You and I both missed Arsenal away, where we won 2-1 through Trossard and a brilliant goal from Wepu from a fantastic cutback from Casado making his first league start.
One of the goals of the season contenders, and we made up for missing that, didn't we, by the Tottenham game. But anyway,
So Casado came in at that point, which is one of the reasons that we turned it round, seemingly. We had a lot better, more in midfield. Wepu came back, although he was in and out a bit more the last few games. Casado stayed out every single one of the last eight games. And then next weekend, having missed Arsenal away and being really fed up for both of us, being really pissed off about that, went to Tottenham, early kickoff, contained Kane and Son pretty comprehensively. And then, 89th minute in front of our own fans, Trossard gets the winner. We almost did gift them a goal straight away afterwards because they had a gilt-edged chance. And how they missed it pretty comprehensively as well.
We do know how to make it difficult for ourselves.
Yeah.
But that was a great...
I only realised how good a chance it was. I mean, I thought it looked a good chance anyway, but I only realised how good a chance it was. I think at the time I thought it might have been offside, but then I realised, no, it wasn't even close. Trossard, though, to be fair, brilliant finish.
And
the scenes afterwards, it was such a great afternoon afterwards.
Limbs in the away end, and then Hampton Brewery, and what a great day out that
what
was.
What an evening that was, yeah.
Bit of sunburn.
We'd have gone there tonight, but if we weren't worried about it, we shot at 10 o'clock in the Champions League, but I'll get extra time.
Yeah, exactly.
So then we carry that on to the next home game, 2-0 with Southampton, after half or 20 minutes, 1-0 after like 2 minutes.
We shouldn't have lost that.
I mean, a slightly dodgy free kick given to them for Ward-Prowse because there's a clear foul on Cooper Rea in a build-up before he then fouled their player.
I mean, get the wins against Norwich and hold out for that win, we're in Europe.
Yeah.
Gutter. Anyway, I digress. So the Saints game was annoying, but the other games around it,
followed
the other games plus the game afterwards.
Which you went to, obviously, at Wolves. was a very good day out. I mentioned from what I've heard, it sounded like a comfortable win, comprehensive. They were pretty poor and we were dominant.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's hard not to think of this as my favourite game of the season. We go in 1-0 at home to Man U at half time, and you think, we've dominated them, we've hammered them, they can't be as bad second half.
Worry.
I mean, I think most of the Albion fans on the ground were like that. You know, we've been in half time 1-0 up so many times.
Yeah.
And the other team turn it around second half, and then 15 minutes later, they're 4 up, and it's.
Yeah. It's just heaven.
I think I was just watching that, looking at the scoreboard every 20 minutes, was going like, I can't, is this really true?
And you've got that stat about Cristiano Ronaldo, who's famously got booked and got shaken his head, because he, compared with McTominay, he should have got booked, if you compare the two scenarios. McTominay should have got booked 4 or 5 times in a row, didn't, and then Ronaldo did one indiscretion and got booked. So there's that whole thing. Then there's a later point.
I'm not sure he was shaking his head because he got booked, though, to be fair, at the
I think at that moment he was, but later he was standing there with hands on hips, shaking his head with a rueful smile, and I think that was my favourite moment of the whole afternoon. Now, you've got one of the players that could claim to be the greatest of all time, one of the greatest of all time, definitely, in a team that's got thrashed 4-0 by us, and that's not happened outside of, I think, is it Liverpool and Atletico and Barca or something? Are the only teams, there's three teams, I think, that he's not scored against where there's been a 4-goal margin or something like that. There's some kind of snap. And how delicious was that? Brilliant. It's well overdue, wasn't it?
Having gone to school in North London, the time where Man U glory hunters were like kind of right,
so all the kids at school Man U fans.
Well, obviously a lot of Arsenal and Tottenham and a bit of like one or two West Ham, and there was randomly an Oxford fan as well, and me, and a few Barnet fans. But yeah, there were quite a lot of Man U fans as well. And
so that one's for you, Peter.
I know, if you told me in 93 when I was like secondary school, when all these Man U fans, that we then end up beating them 4-0 under 30 years later.
That one is for you in 1993 at school, when it's for all the other Albion fans in 1983 in that cup replay, which happened to be a 4-0 scoreline. So we still owe Man United for all of the shitty luck we have with decisions.
If anything, we deserve more. We hit the post, or they hit the post for us, but I mean, McAllister probably should have got there ahead. Welbeck came very close at the end.
Yeah. We just couldn't look like we were just
Sanchez,
so dominant.
To be fair, made a couple of good saves, but it wasn't until 4-0 that he made those saves.
Yeah.
It was already 4-0 at that point.
Delicious.
And I mean, it was one of those things where you just sit there and football does not get any better than this. It's like, I don't understand where we go from this point.
It was a proper festival party atmosphere, wasn't it? Everyone was just buzzing. They knew it was something special. Because we've not done that before against a Man United or anything.
No, we've scored 4 goals in the top flight, and we've beaten top teams, but we've not combined the two. We've not stuffed the top team yet.
Yeah. And it was just a great day. It was a nice weather.
Although, as the BBC told us this week, Man United are rubbish, so you know.
Exactly, yeah. It's always be about that.
I don't understand why someone criticised the BBC for telling the truth. It's like, just be honest.
Well, then came the worst moment of the season, which is our second in a row occasion of failing to beat Leeds, which I'm sure is to your chagrin completely, Peter.
I mean, to be honest, that weekend it wasn't really my main focus.
No, that was the stag weekend.
Yeah.
So we just went out and had a couple of small glasses
of sherry,
I think it was something like
sweet
that.
Sweet sherry.
Nothing more, nothing less.
Couple of bats.
So we weren't there with all the wig-bound Albion fans going up to Elm Road, or Fell End Road, as I call it. And we won it up. Should have been 4 or 5 nil up at half-time by all accounts.
Yeah.
Ended up being
poor in the second half. Welbeck missed the sitter.
Ted Lasso turned it around for them in the second half, but he couldn't. Yeah, they got the equaliser. In the end, they did survive, but not because of that result. We can console ourselves with the fact that made no difference at all to league survival. It was all about the fact that Burnley lost Leeds 1 on the final game of the season. So,
and we can tell us that Burnley went down as
exactly.
well. I mean,
and also by the fact
as
that
in the words of Will from the Inbetweeners, it's like when they're going in the film, they're going to, I think they're on tour or whatever, and they're. There's these like Burnley fans being loud and shout abusive on the coach, and he's like, when people ask if I like football, I say yes I do, but not Burnley. Burnley can fuck off. And they have
indeed, and they may not be back for a while.
No, I think judging by their, they're going to lose quite a lot of their key players. Their board has got no interest in investing, and
Tchaikovsky's out of contract.
Stealing. Say Tchaikovsky or
Tarkovsky.
Tchaikovsky
is definitely out of contract. Tarkovsky is. McNeil will probably
Hope
get sold.
Will be off.
Hope will be off.
Probably Cornet will be off. Seeing some off back to his loan deals ending.
Exactly, yeah, that's right, yeah. His famous loan deal that isn't a loan deal.
Dale Stevens might even leave.
He might, no, he's out of contract. Yeah.
Ashley Barnes, you know.
We can get him back. But it, that was
they've
the penultimate weekend. They've lost words, yeah. Lots of people have. But no. We
I knew I'd line you up.
Final weekend of the season, of course. It was against another of our favourite Clarendon Blue sides. We'd like all the teams of Clarendon Blue, don't we, really? Burnley, Aston Villa, West Ham.
They're in my top three Clarendon Blue Premier League teams of this season.
That you dislike.
I actually don't have an issue with West Ham, to be honest. I've not really seen that much of the issues there.
Every away game I've gone to, there's been some unpleasantness of one sort or another somewhere. So I'm absolutely delighted that we finished the season in style, coming from behind to win 3-1. Thoroughly deserved. I think the first half we weren't great in that match.
First half we were poor. West Ham, I think we said like the last
was poor, wasn't it?
We were poor. West Ham were better but didn't really create the thing. Second half West Ham were poor, we were a lot better and created loads.
Yeah.
And actually 3-1 again flattered them in the end.
Yeah.
Welbeck missed two good, very good chances before he scored.
So
there
again,
were other ones. We could easily have won 4 or
5-1. We could have done more.
And I still think it was a foul on dunk for their goal.
Yeah. We could have done more in defeat, in victory or in draws. Yeah. We could have done more. It's a recurring
thing.
We've
also drawn a lot of games late on.
It shows there's so much potential for growth.
If I was offered ninth again next season, given the amount of money that the likes of Newcastle and Villa and that sort of team.
Everton might bounce back. Yeah. I'd take it. Top half has got the same thing has got to be the target for next season.
I'd even take 11th or 12th probably.
We want Europe, and I'm sure Tony Bloom's thinking, could get Europe. But in reality, I think all of us, him included, would say we would take the same next season.
I've already agreed with Fee that if we get played Dynamo Tbilisi away, then we'll take a trip. She wants to go to Georgia. She wants to do a trip to Tbilisi.
To Georgia.
We're having a trip to Dynamo Tbilisi away.
Georgia on your mind, have you, Peter? Yeah. Well, anyway, so that was the season. We ended up on 51 points.
That was the season that was.
It was the season that was. Great, a bit of radio reference. You audio fans out there? But it's 51 points, brilliant total.
That was the whatever number of weeks it was.
And you mentioned there Bissouma, obviously the first half in that game against West Ham, he was poor, we were poor, and he was subbed off and Morpay came on. But Bissouma, I think he apparently had been under the weather, to be fair. However, it's a bit of a shame if that ends up, as it probably will be, being his last game, because last season he was our player of the season I vote for this season coming up in just a moment, but
he was all Brighton's best player of the season last season. It was just a ridiculous Leeds hijacking for some
I'm
still not quite sure why they hijacked the votes, but what the point was,
just to show how much they loved him or whatever. I just disregard that vote, but I'm talking about the Brighton one. Was
the only one that players matter.
The only one that matters, yeah. That's the one the players really look out for, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it, you guys?
None of this players or fans players. It's like only the small proportion of people listen to the one podcast.
Very quickly on Bissouma, so he's probably likely to go. There's a lot of talk about a lot of heat being around Cucurella. That there's some serious interest coming in from big clubs at the moment. That's just on this side of the channel, so to speak. I don't know if it's going to come in from abroad as well. Hopefully we want to keep Cucurella for the time being. We don't want that to happen. We probably would all resign ourselves and be quite happy to see the scenario where Bissouma goes with our blessing this season, having served us well.
There's two, as far as I see it, there's two positive outcomes for this summer. Either Bissouma signs a new contract, which seems very unlikely at the moment. He'd have surely done it by now if he'd have taken the pay rise that surely he'd have got.
Yeah.
Or he goes for a decent fee.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no point keeping for another season and losing him on a free transfer.
Either way round, we'd be happy, wouldn't we? Yes. Yeah. Yep. So we'll see how that goes. Peter's being intervened with.
That just sounds so wrong.
I know, that's why I said
that. Funny Chelsea fans turning up.
Oh dear. Anyway, we've already had a go about Chelsea, haven't we? Now we've already, they can't beat us in the Premier League. And then Liverpool can't beat Chelsea, actually. But anyway, we've got, digression at the end.
Finals.
Cup finals, that's true. But not in normal time. Anyway, so that rounds it up pretty much for the season. Bissouma probably will go, I think. If we can get a reasonable fee from
him. I mean, he's been a brilliant signing.
Goes with our blessing.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can reinvest.
He has gone from, he signed it for 15 million. He was in and out of it under Houghton and initially under Potter as well. But since lockdown, really, he's been our best player by a distance overall. I'd say probably it's been superb, and
I mean, if all things were equal, he'd probably go for like 50-60 million. Whether we'll get close to that with the contract situation and all that, I don't think we probably will, but I mean, I think, yeah, if all things were equal, he'd go for more than White, I reckon. He's a better player than Ben White.
Yeah. Well, player of the season for 2021-22 season.
Have you got a podcast of the season?
Have we got what? Podcast of the season, did you say? Well, I don't know. I can't think of any podcast that I like, really. That Brian Rock one's awful.
I meant podcaster, rather than...
Oh, podcaster. I think it's got to be Peter. Someone's playing some annoying music in the background of a Chelsea variety. Peter's Chelsea friend has turned up in the background, just to explain what that is. Right, here we go.
He's not my friend, he's my associate.
Player of the season, right. So we've had loads and loads of votes, tons of them in. We've got a voting system where you pick your top three, 3 points, 2 points, 1 point. For your three in order, yeah. Nil point. So we've had an overwhelming response, which has been brilliant. Just a few comments from those that we've had.
He was literally adding it up as we went along.
Nick's voted for Kukureya, Veltman and then Morpay, but he said honourable mention to Danny Welbeck and to Grosch. We've had interesting Wedge, friend of the show. He's gone for Kukureya, Sanchez and Veltman, and he said really tough between Sanchez and Veltman, but for me, for his quick and his quick adjustment to the Premier League, for his commitment, his humility, his flair, his energy, his reliability, his defensive strength, his attacking intent, as a team man, as someone who is clearly grounded and has a massive emotional bond with the squad, the club and the fans, head and shoulders above for me. All I want for a team is Kukureya's, he says. So that's from Wedge. We've also had comments from Steve Farris, friend of the show. He's a referee, of course, as well. You might remember him being on. He's gone Kukureya, then Veltman and Morpay. He said Kukureya just for the massive hair. Also one hell of a player. He's gone Veltman, best 900,000k we ever spent.
900,000k? That's a lot of money. It's like 900 million.
900k. Yes, 900k we've ever spent.
900,000k is like, I don't know what's really good.
That's me, not Steve. Steve did put the right details down. Best 900k we've ever spent, and has shown the binning of 63 million worth.
Significantly higher than the world record.
Peter, will you stop interrupting? We're trying to finish this podcast. Right, binning off 63 million worth of defenders, we've conceded less goals, which is a good point. And three, his choice of Neil Morpay, bit patchy latterly, but crucial goals and some top shithousery, changed the game against West Ham, this is the earlier game obviously, and reminded the homophobes what the score was. Oh, sorry, no, that's the second game, yeah. Yeah, he scored the equaliser in the first game, of course, is that too?
He changed the game.
I know. Special mention also to Pascal for his Grosch turns, and despite calls from the bedwetters, showed his absolute class. Aside from that, we've had a load of other responses. The interesting one is Jack, one of the only people not to pick Kukureya as his first choice. He went Bissouma, Duncan Kukureya. He said if Bissouma was obviously staying and had a bigger hair, he'd be everyone's number one. He said slightly facetiously.
I don't agree with that at all. I don't think Bissouma's paid enough or consistently enough this year to be even close to number one.
True, but Jack did say he's been out of the stratosphere at times this season, which is also true, to be fair.
Not as much as last season, I'd say, and I don't think his form has been patchy in a couple of spells, whereas Kukureya and Veltman are the two, for me, who've been consistently good, even in our worst patches.
Fair enough.
Whereas Bissouma's form dropped significantly at one point.
Yeah. There is that. Tony Bowden says Kukureya, Veltman and then Morpay. We would not have finished where we did without his goals. He also said, I want to nominate Alzate for player I would have liked to have seen more of, if that's a category. To which Chris Jonas, another Seagulls of London member, said Sarmiento as well. Absolutely. And I'd go along with that too. Tony Brown, friend of the show, Brighton and Chelsea fan. Explain that one if you will, Tony. Kukureya, Veltman and Bissouma. Jackie's gone Kukureya, Veltman and Grosch. Player I'd like to have seen more consistently is Marsh. Pete Richardson went Kukureya, Dunk and Sanchez. And fourth is Morpay for his key goals. And an honourable mention.
Fourth is nothing.
It's nowhere. Janet, other half of Chris, said Kukureya, Veltman and Bissouma. Prior to injury, I think the Modder would have been in the running for second or third place. So I nominate him for the player I would have liked to see more of. Then there's a number of other votes from Seagulls Over London members, just to mention Duncan Rouse, friend of the show, Kukureya, Trossard and then Veltman. He's gone my favourites for the season, But Grosch would have been a strong contender if he'd shown his recent form all season.
And well, his general view that he's been put further forward recently, hasn't he? And it seems to thrive on it, whereas when before he was like much deeper in midfield and having to do a lot more work, as well as kind of like, you know, he's actually been, they've found the right position for him recently.
Yeah, I
really hope he signs a new deal now, because he's looked superb recently.
Yeah, I do too.
That finish on his left foot, so his wrong foot on Salah. I mean, it was a brilliant move anyway on last Sunday, but that finish on his left foot was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely true. And Rich, friend of the show, he's got in touch to say he really enjoyed the West Ham episode at the end of the season. Best ever, he said, so far, which is brilliant. He liked the pre-match, the post-match,
I mean,
and the during match.
The rest of them have been crap.
Yeah, the rest have been awful, yeah. But he's given us his three.
He's actually adequate, whereas the rest have been poor.
Rich has gone Kukurea, Veltman and the dunk. So the final scores then for our player of the season. I think it's already obvious from the snippets that I've plucked out who's going to be, Connolly's top. Here is the voting then. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 11 people have had votes. One of them, and I'm looking at you, Wilt, as we call him, Vinny, Peter Ward has got one vote for 1 point. Eleven people were picked. Yeah, including
like
Peter Ward. Yeah,
Ward's picked.
Yeah, he's been picked. Yeah, he's still.
Oh, has been picked.
Have been picked. Yeah,
I thought maybe there were picked. I'm sure there's been a lot more people who've like commented than that.
No. That's loads and loads of people have commented.
Yeah.
But
millions.
Basically, 3 points for the first choice, two for second,
any of
third.
Philippines fans.
I don't think they have. No, I don't think they have. 3 points for your first choices, two for your second, one for your thirds, and the points totals in general have gone in this ascending order. Peter Ward with one, Pascal Grosch with one. To be drawing with Peter Ward, commendable.
He should be honoured. The number one is Pascal Grosch.
Morda got three, and that's just from one vote, you'll notice from what we read out earlier. Moore paid 5 points, Sanchez eight, including a point from me. Dunkey eight, Biss nine, Ali McAllister 14, and then we come to the top three. An honourable mention to Ali Mac, actually had a good season in the end.
When is he coming back?
Yeah, number three is Leandro Trossard with 30 points. Second position is, well, probably one of the best bargains of all time. What a great player. It's Mr. Veltman with 54
points. Well done, Joel, as they get called.
And in first place, by a matter of a mere, I think it's 72 points, at the top of the charts, a player who all the big clubs are looking at, or are looking at you in the background, Mr. Chelsea.
Yeah.
Chelsea are looking at him. It is, of course, Mark Cucurella with 126 points of the vote. And what a player he's been in his debut season as well, to have been as good as he is. I think
he's been superb, absolutely no question. He was clearly player of the year in, I think, every category, including the players, which is always good as well. You got the players one as well. So well done, Mark. He is
brilliant.
He's been superb, and
he likes 15, the wigs as well, apparently.
£15 million thing that we cost. Yeah. It's like, I mean,
and there's talk of 50 mil plus.
Even the ridiculous ones are talking about 30, we're not going to take anywhere. We've got 4 years left in the contract.
Yeah.
We're not taking anything under 50, I reckon.
Yeah,
Chilwell can go for 50, then and Mendy and players like
Peter
that.
Peter says looking over his shoulder.
Or City pay at start 50 million with fullbacks, don't they? As well, if they're interested.
Yeah.
They start, their fullbacks all cost 50 million minimum, don't they?
Indeed. So time is moving on. We've got our buddies to turn up, so we've got to socialise now. We might do a little bit later, post Champions League.
Got to socialise. It's like some sort of like hardship.
If the champion, it's awful. I struggle, the Champions League, if it's got any way of living up to the National League Premier semi-final that happened today, then I'll be very glad. We're looking forward.
Well,
to
I hope
that.
They're getting him into the playoffs. They've got to like compete with Grimsby.
What time are you guys? We're still here. Five balls.
Yeah,
your two
down
friends
now.
Are here, right?
Coming down now. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And we are indeed going down now. So we're going to round off this episode now. We might come back with an epilogue, but if not, we'll sign out in the usual way, Peter.
We hate Chelsea.
Not like that. We'll do that later. So Peter, over to you to sign us out.
Stand or fall.
Up the Albion. And so, we imbibed ourselves of further drinks. We had some lovely food. Chicken tikka pies. Oh, you've got to love them. And we watched the match. And the match finished 1-0 to Real Madrid. Congratulations to them. It wasn't the most remarkable of games. Real scored from their only shot on goal. Liverpool had the best of it by far, particularly in the attacking third of the field. But Courtois was the man of the match. And two saves in particular probably were the telling difference between the sides, along with Real's goal, of course. One particular save by Courtois from those two from Mane was really an excellent save and really made a difference to them. So they go on to 14 wins, which is the double tally of the next nearest club, which is Milan with 7. Liverpool, for their part, remain on 6, which in turn is double the next of an English club with 3, Manchester United. But Real Madrid, with their 14th title, go marching on. They just really cannot stop winning this, can they? 8 successive finals have been won by Real Madrid. Incredible stuff. Anyway, as I sit here talking on the Monday, I've got to quickly sum up what else happened at the weekend and then go on to a little bit of a rant about what else happened in Paris. So what else happened at the weekend in terms of football? We had the second of the National League Premier Division semi-finals. Remember, they had that spectacular Wrexham-Grimsby game we were talking about earlier, which finished Wrexham 4, Grimsby 5. Incredible. The second one was Solihull Moors against Chesterfield. And for the first time out of the 4 games to decide the finalists, it was the home team that prevailed. Solihull Moors winning 3-1. So they go into Sunday's final of this coming weekend against Grimsby Town, who won, of course, that other match. Meantime, in the that's the National League. In the EFL, League 2 came to its conclusion with a game, I think we've already alluded to the result, but just to sum up and to confirm, that did finish Port Vale 3, Mansfield 0. A very proactive, ambitious and forward-thinking club now, being very well run by all accounts in recent times after some times pretty much in the doldrums. Congratulations to Port Vale, whose manager, Daryl Clark, was quite emotional and dedicated the win to his daughter, who sadly passed away a few months ago. So an emotional moment for him. Congratulations to him and to Port Vale. And we'll see how they do in League One next season. That's pretty much that. Just going back then to the Champions League. The game itself was of no particular note, but what happened at the stadium, both before and after the game, was something else that really was of note, and not for good reasons. We've had, of course, in the 80s, some serious incidents. Heysel, Hillsborough, we know what's happened with that. And so, given the backdrop to that, to have Liverpool fans going to a Champions League final in Paris, and to have them congested, bottlenecked, cajoled, pepper sprayed, and basically abused by the French police, and then to have the blame attached to them in terms of, in this case, just turning up late to the game, has some rather unpleasant undertones. By all accounts, there were some Hillsborough survivors in amongst the crowd attending the match, or trying to attend the match, and they were being held up for some time. This is all disturbing, and it's disturbing because it paints Liverpool in a bad light. When Liverpool fans, by all the accounts I've heard from anywhere, were pretty blameless in what happened. Essentially, what happened was, according to countless reports, including from a number of credible journalists, amongst them Carvey Solicull, who did a 5-minute report post-match on what had happened, he was describing how the fans were signposted and then cattled through a certain area, an underpass by a bridge. Through a certain area, they were checked for tickets at least on one occasion, I believe on at least 2 occasions, before they got up into an elevated area above that area, which was outside the grounds and was just outside the turnstiles. When all those fans got into that area and others were joining in behind, they were unable to get through the gates. Turnstiles Y and Z were the only 2 turnstiles that were supposedly open for access for Liverpool fans. Not sure why they didn't have more available. There were more turnstiles there, apparently. Anyway, regardless of that, they weren't letting anybody through, it seemed. Hardly anybody was getting through. There were accusations by the stadium authorities that there were a number of counterfeit tickets. This was not substantiated. Nobody, none of the journalists who were on hand, none of the eyewitnesses could say that they had heard of any fake tickets. The only one example I can think of that I've seen reports of was a ticket that was given by Andrew Robertson, the fullback for Liverpool, to a friend of his, which was a sanctioned thing to do. That ticket was given to him to do so by the club, which of course originally came through UEFA. And at the turnstiles, that ticket was apparently a counterfeit, according to the stadium people. They didn't know what they were doing. That clearly isn't a counterfeit ticket. How the hell could it be? And if it was, why? The French authorities in this matter, and UEFA, and the French police, have collectively been a shambles and a disgrace. They have coloured the game in a bad light after what happened on Saturday. Essentially, they were not letting Liverpool fans in, regardless of whether they had valid tickets or not, and there was a countless number of fans who were claiming they had, you could see they had genuine tickets from the way they were talking about it, where they bought them from, etc. They weren't being allowed in. They couldn't move back. There was a crush developing because people were being moved around. They were being moved around, not least because some of the police came out through a gate, were very aggressive and heavy-handed. There was one visual image of a policeman punching a fan who was simply remonstrating at being pushed back and about the crush that was going on around them. Nothing more than that. And he was assaulted by the police. The fans were tear-gassed on more than one occasion. There was a huge number of examples of pepper spraying by the police as well, including a fan who was trying to get in with a genuine ticket and was getting it swiped and was pepper sprayed regardless of that showing as a genuine ticket. That's on film somewhere. Carvis Olicall, as I said, the prominent Sky chief senior reporter for Sky Sports News in matters related to football, he was there. He was at the game, at the ground, and he witnessed what was going on. There's a BBC reporter who was on this morning, Monday morning, on TV, talking about a similar experience. Liverpool fans were remarkably restrained. They weren't acting in a disorderly way in any way, shape or form, and yet they were being tear-gassed, pepper-sprayed, and assaulted, essentially, in various ways, by the police, simply because they couldn't cope. And the disorganisation by the authorities, by both the French authorities and by UEFA, was simply inadequate. It was shambolic, in fact. And to that end, Liverpool fans were in distress. Some of these people, as I mentioned, were Hillsborough survivors. And regardless of that, no fans, whether it's the elderly, women and children, disabled fans, all of whom were present in amongst these crowds, and who were all getting streaming eyes from pepper spraying, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace and should never happen. Passers-by just outside that area were also being affected, who weren't even Liverpool fans, weren't even going to the game necessarily. That is a disgrace. And all of the reports are suggesting that Liverpool fans arrive late. This is a blatant lie. All accounts I've heard is that Liverpool fans were arriving at least 2 to 2.5 hours before kickoff. That's not late, is it? And some of them were there 3, 3.5 hours early. They still couldn't get in. In a number of cases, they missed the game. That is ridiculous. It's simply ridiculous. Now, if those fans weren't arriving late and they had valid tickets, why were they unable to get into the ground? Now, what's happened is, after initially blaming the fans, the authorities have then gone on to say, actually, there was a massive, in fact, an industrial scale, to quote the French minister, sports minister, an industrial scale of fraudulence going on with regard to ticketing, either on phones or paper tickets, don't know which, but either way round, industrial scale fraud, claiming that 70%, that's 70% of the tickets being produced on phones or in paper form were fraudulent. How can that be possible? I've got friends that go to major events like this and they've said that's ridiculous. It's unrealistic to say that that number of fraudulent tickets would have been present. It just seems farcical. Anyway, that's what they were saying was the case. Well, if people like Andy Robertson's friend are getting turned away with what must be genuine tickets, 100% nailed on guaranteed, how many more cases were like that where fans were being turned away when they had genuine tickets? And adding to these fictitious numbers that the sports ministry and the French sports minister and the interior minister have made up to, well, to pass the blame, to pass the buck, to scapegoat. It wasn't their fault. They weren't badly organised. The police weren't heavy-handed more than necessary. That's what the picture is they're trying to paint. And yet, that is exactly what the case was. The police, we already know, in all of France, Italy and Spain, all three of those nations, they have a bad reputation for the heavy-handedness of their policing. It's panicky, it's full-on, it's over-the-top, it's indiscriminatory in terms of the violence with batoning and spraying and, well, in one case, as I said, punching of supporters to try and gain crowd control. They have a major problem with hooliganism in France. as manifested also this weekend with Saint Etienne, who've just got relegated for the first time in 20 years. They had a relegation promotion playoff against rivals from the division below. They lost, I think they drew at home, lost on aggregate, something like that. Fans invaded the pitch in large numbers and fired fireworks horizontally at the players on a large scale. There's been incidents of fans, children, women and children, and players all being assaulted on a number of occasions in France. They have an issue with hooliganism there. But what they've done, those French police, is they've taken this edgy, over-the-top, heavy-handed approach with supporters who have done absolutely nothing wrong. They've turned up in plenty of time. Whether or not they've had drinks is neither here nor there, because they've behaved fine. They've behaved with what has been described as remarkable constraint. And yet, they have been pepper sprayed. Why did this happen? It was the crush. They were worrying about the numbers. Well, they should have controlled those numbers. And if anyone didn't have valid tickets, why were they allowed through into that later stage just outside the main turnstiles? Why weren't they funneled out at the earlier point, at the earlier ticket checking area? That's the question. What has also been suggested is that this issue was only going on at the Liverpool end. They are trying to imply that the English were the culprits in all this. Why did they turn up late? Why didn't they have the correct tickets? And why was the disorder only at one end? Well, it wasn't. This is another misrepresentation. Again, going back to Carve Solical, he's an excellent journalist. He's a man with very reasonable and measured approaches to all the subjects that he deals with. He's an articulate guy, and he's not prone to any kind of exaggeration. And he's saying he'd been at both ends. He'd seen what had happened at the Liverpool end, but he'd also been round the other side, and he'd seen what had happened at the Madrid end, where the 20,000 Madrid fans' tickets were to be accessed. And in both cases, what had happened was that gangs of French youths turned up trying to get over the barriers in both those areas. They were trying to scale the gates, in some cases succeeding. There were apparently a lot of successes in the Madrid end of the ground in this regard, and yet they were able to do so. And the pepper spraying may have been in reaction partly to that, but what happened was absolutely out of order. Fans at both ends of the ground were harmed by the actions of the police. There was a lot of trauma involved for a lot of supporters. That is a disgrace. That should not be happening. And I'm not pretending that the English are squeaky clean. Look what happened at Wembley. The behaviour of the supporters, so-called supporters, in that instance, turning up on an epic scale and all just trying to storm in, is a disgrace. Disorderly behaviour, lawless behaviour, is not to be condoned. But there is blame also to be applied to the authorities for not having more stringent measures to stop fans from getting in. So we're not blameless in this, but the French have a bad reputation for this disorder in terms of the organisation. Also, the French police for their heavy-handedness. Also, UEFA for cocking stuff up. They cocked up the Europa League final. They had the authorities there weren't organised well enough. The stadium didn't have anywhere near adequate enough numbers of food and drink options. Fans were standing around in 30-degree heat. They couldn't get water. That's not acceptable for a major event. This isn't a humanitarian crisis. It's a major sporting event in a first-world country. Why the hell is that happening? And also, why were they held in so long after the game as well? Absolute disgrace. So UEFA has form. That's just 2 weeks ago, or whatever it is. You know, this is happening far too often. We've seen other more tragic scenarios as well, such as Cameroon in the AFCON. But nonetheless, keeping it with the Western European theme, they're not organised well enough. And it's as simple as that. And they're scapegoating to blame it on Liverpool fans. Liverpool fans, as far as I can see, did nothing wrong. There's one fan trying to get in. He's getting sprayed in the face with a valid ticket as he's trying to go up to the turnstile. How is that acceptable behaviour? Let alone the disgrace that's happened since, which is on Monday morning, the authorities got together to analyse what had happened and to come to some conclusions. Those authorities comprised the French ministry, the French authorities, including the police, UEFA. Where was the representation from any journalists / eyewitnesses in general / supporters who have had difficulties, genuine supporters? Where was the representation from them? They've all come to the conclusion that fans arrived late and that there was loads of fraud going on. when actually the reality is that that is simply a lie on both counts, a simple lie. But nobody can argue about that because they all got together and decided themselves. They're going to misrepresent this. They're going to avoid blame. They're going to evade blame, as they always do. UEFA, I've been, as you know, probably know if you're listening to this regularly, I've been a staunch critic of UEFA, as I have with FIFA as well. And this does not help, does it? It just tries to paint English football fans and Liverpool football fans in particular in a bad light. There's history here, and the history of what happened before with Hillsborough was a gross misrepresentation and gross negligence, as far as I'm concerned, by people that are supposed to be looking after the interests of the public during a major sporting event. They failed to do so. Thankfully, in this case, nobody appears to have been seriously harmed. However, that wasn't by chance. That wasn't by design. That's by chance. And yes, the more modern stadium is less likely to cause problems than a crumbling wreck such as Hillsborough or Heysel. However, nonetheless, that's not good enough. It's simply not good enough. It's a disgrace, and they need to be held accountable for this because people could have been harmed. And what also happened, by the way, after the game, when fans were coming out of the grounds, this is at the Stade de France, which is in Saint-Denis, which is one of the rougher areas of Paris, and Paris is a rough city at its roughest, it has to be said. We'd already seen lots of examples of French youths and gangs turning up trying to get into the grounds. What happens afterwards? Well, French youths and gangs preyed on all of the supporters coming out of the grounds, the tourists, the Liverpool fans, the Madrid fans. In both cases, those fans were set upon. They were mugged, they were robbed, and they were by multiple gangs. Well, this was happening on a widespread level. You talk about industrial-scale fraud. No. Let's talk about industrial-scale disorder by local youths, not properly prevented from doing so by the police. That's the one damn job the police should be doing, because there was no disorder amongst the genuine football fans. They should have been stopping disorderly local youths from attacking people attending a major tournament in a first world country. Why is that not able to happen? Well, they tried to do something about it to an extent. They pepper sprayed, or tried to pepper spray them. But what did they really do? They pepper sprayed more of the football fans themselves, the victims of the muggings after the game, some of whom would have been pepper sprayed before getting into the ground in the first place, if they were lucky enough to be able to get into the grounds. They were attacked again. There was more batoning, I'm hearing reports of. And the police just didn't do enough. Simple as that. It's an absolute disgrace. Anyway, that's really coloured the, in a bad way, the events on Saturday, which should have been a showpiece occasion. It's Europe's golden jewel event. And, well, it's turned into a bit of a farce, really, hasn't it? And I don't know what the fallout will be in the longer term over this. But what I do know for one thing for sure, there's going to be misrepresentation of what's happened. And that is an absolute disgrace. So anyway, that's that. So, moving back to happier subjects, or at least vaguely happier, the Albion. One or two more bits of news. First of all, it seems that agreement may be close to being made between the Albion and Newcastle United over the departure and move to Newcastle of our sporting director, Dan Ashworth, who's been serving his notice on gardening leave. The club not letting him come back towards the towards the premises. He's got to stay out on gardening leave. But Newcastle weren't able to appoint him because agreement for compensation hadn't been reached. Rumours of 5 to 6 million being the figure that Albion may be wanted. There are rumours now going around on certain social media outlets that agreement is close, with suggestions of a £3 million figure. I have no idea if any of this is true or accurate, but it does seem that there is an agreement moving towards conclusion. Okay, in one sense, I'm quite happy with that we could finally get an agreement to get some compensation. On the other hand, though, I don't really want Newcastle to get him any earlier than we absolutely need to. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. That's one bit of news. Another bit of news is that Cucurella, our player of the season and Albion's player of the season, as voted for by us at Brighton Rock, by the fans in general for their fans vote, and by the players. He's a fantastic player. He's only had his first season with us. He's hit the ground running. He's got hair all over the place. He's absolutely magnificent. What a player he's been. But he is only in his first season, just finished his first season. And unfortunately, there are rumours abounding now that he may possibly be on his way already, because there's serious interest reported, or rumoured, from some of the big boys, Tottenham, Chelsea, and probably most crushingly, Manchester City. If any or all of those rumours are true, it does seem, if the price is right, that he may be off. But what would that price be? Suggestions of £30 million. It seems unlikely to be so low. More likely, I think we'll be looking at doubling that or thereabouts to get a figure that would be suitable for Albion to lose such an asset so soon. He's not part of the succession plan yet. He's supposed to be with us 2 to 3 years. That would be the ideal scenario, as was the case with Bissouma, who will probably be off this summer. Cuckoo's not the one we want to lose at this stage. We probably need some backup for him as it is, but if we need to replace him, that's going to be a complication. But we'll see how things pan out over the summer. We will be having some podcasts during the summer, so we will give you some updates as and when we hear some more information. But that's one bit of Albion news as well. And the other bit is also related to Cucurella, the Player of the Season vote. We announced the results for Player of the Season. Don't panic, we've got them right. But we have forgotten to add some other details and information. So we've had some other votes put in, which we hadn't accounted for. It hasn't affected the overall totals, but we do need to sum up and update the final scoring. So here we go. So Kevin Markwick, friend of the show, from the Picture House in Cuckfield, Picture House in Uckfield, said, Cucurella, Dunk Webster, I like this solid attacking defence we have. Scott McCarthy said, hi Russ, I suspect we all know who is winning, who the winner is here, but I'd go Cucurella, Grosch, that losing run came with him out of the team, and Veltman at number three. Brett's gone Cucurella, Veltman and Morpay, just for the limbs. Nick Schapanik, friend of the show, he's gone with Cucurella as his first choice, Veltman as his second, and McAllister as his third. He said Ali Mack is the unsung hero of the season, I think. So versatile. Some of the tackles he made in the Bissouma role in the second half against West Ham were fearsome. I agree with you, Nick. I think he's been excellent. He is an unsung hero, and I am on record as being a big fan of his. And I think he's got a lot more to show as well. I think he's still growing into the roles, and I think he's getting better as the seasons go by, I think. We've got a lot more to look forward to with him. The Dogma Boys, who we had on, of course, as well. They've gone with the following. Parker has gone Veltman, Dunk and Tony Bloom as third choice. James went Veltman, Cucurella and then Dunk. And Rich went with Cucurella, Tross and then Biss. So thank you to the Dogma Boys. We also had a late entry from Raymond the Gent, who went with Cucurella as his first choice, Trossard as his second, and Sanchez as his third. He also added a young player of the year as Caicedo. A number of people also mentioned people they wish they'd seen more of for various reasons, either to do with injuries or being out on loan earlier in the season or just being introduced a bit late. And those names really included Mwepu, Caicedo and Sarmiento as the main ones, but we'll see how it goes next season, certainly. So here's the final totals anyway. So with the updated information, this is the full list in ascending order. Tony Bloom and Peter Ward with one vote, at 1 point each. Adam Webster also with a point. Pascal Grosch and Jakub Mudda with 3. Neil Morpay with 6. Bobby Sanchez with 9. Bissouma with 10. Donkey with 13. Ali Mack with 15 now. And the top three remain as they were. Trossard with 34, Veltz with 65, and an overwhelming winner with more than double the points total of anyone else is Cucurella, Cuckoo, with 146 points from the voting. Thank you very much to the large number of people who contributed their votes and their participation in the voting here. Thank you all for giving us your opinion, your feedback and your extra notations. And yeah, Cucurella is a very worthy winner. Let's hope he is back with us next season, to be honest. I think it is too soon for him to be sold, but fingers crossed, we will either get a ridiculously large fee for him or we'll see him in the stripes again next season. That pretty much sums up this episode then. We will be having some more episodes during the summer. We hope to get in 2 or 3 special guests. We have got an episode coming up, a special feature including some book, film and other covered features. So we've got that coming up. In the meantime, again, if you can, please rate and review us. It really helps with us on the algorithms and all that other jazz, particularly on Apple. If you can review us 5 stars, that would be absolutely fantastic. Also, on a purely voluntary basis, if you would like to be a Patreon of the podcast, you can do so. It's for as little as £1 a month. You can sign up to subscribe to pay a nominal amount to help us, which will go towards probably funding some microphones in the first instance. Thank you again to our patrons so far involved, and if you do want to do that, you can check them out on www.patreon, which is patreon.com/BrightonRockPod, with capital B, R and P from Brighton Rock Pod. So that's www.patreon.com/BrightonRockPod. Thank you very much for listening as always. That sums up all matters really for the active part of this season just finished. It's been a good one. Let's hope for another one in the new season coming up. And in the meantime, we'll see you, or you'll hear us rather, for some more pods during the summer. Stay tuned for those as and when they pop up. In the meantime, stand or fall, up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.